time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, former president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor. Well, good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Mark. Good to hear you again. And, you know, a lot of things to talk about right off the top of the head here. So I don't want, and I know, you know, I always run over. So I know Lori and I talked about running over a little bit today because we've got so much to talk about. So I'm really looking forward to this show. And, you know, any comments you want to make it while we're into this, that would be fine. But I also want to let folks know that despite all the stuff we have to talk about with Iran and all the rest of that stuff, I did want to have Rebecca Watson, who's been on our show before, but she is the chair of the Baldwin County Moms for Liberty. And I think that it's important for us to hear some of the things that, she's been doing, because these are key issues, not only in Baldwin County, but in Alabama. So, again, I appreciate the fact that she's here, and I'll have her on as soon as I finish my discussion of the Israeli, you know, response attack from last Saturday. So let's get right to that if we could. So let's do a little bit of a background on what happened. Okay, evidently, and again, I have talked about foreign policy for the last 2 weeks. You know, so it's kind of one of these things that's always on my mind anyway. But we have this situation where on April 1st, the Israelis went ahead and took out two major generals from the Iranian Quds Force who were involved in the planning and the execution of the October 7th attack on Israel by Hamas. Okay? So the question then has been, you know, what will, you know, the Iranians do in response to this, okay? And so one can pose the question, well, what would a proportional response look like? You know, would it be some sort of a small attack, some missile attacks coming out of Hezbollah, what, okay? But what we ended up seeing was not so much of a quote-unquote proportional response, but a major attack, okay? Major attack that ended up with over 300 missiles, drones, and ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, I meant to say, 99% of which were shot down, okay? So let's talk about some of the issues we can possibly see with this whole question of how we should be looking at this in retrospect and in a perspective way, because it is important. Okay, so one of the first things that we should look at is defense, air defense like the Israelis has actually works. I mean, for years, Biden and lots of liberals, and this really goes back to Reagan, and the whole question of Star Wars, and they just poo-pooed all of that. It's not something to be poo-pooed, because the reality is, if it wasn't for that strong defense system, Israel would have suffered a great deal. So, again, 300 instruments coming in, most of them shot down, one casualty at the latest that I've had on that. Okay, here's another major takeaway. The U.S. did contribute to shooting down instruments, and they helped in the coordination of that, which is important, okay? Again, technology, you know, we need it. It has to work. And in this case, it worked on the Israeli side and with U.S. Central Command, okay? Here's another, probably one of the most important takeaways. This was a geopolitical shift in a major way, okay? Just think back to the 67 war, the 73 Yom Kippur war, and what did you see there? All the Arab states aligned against Israel. Okay? What do you see? What did you see this past Saturday? You saw, again, back to the Abraham Accords, what Trump put together on that. You saw Arab states participating to shoot down the Iranian instruments of war. Okay? Saudi Arabia and Jordan. This is a fundamental shift that bodes very well for the future, especially if Trump gets back in. Okay? Now, here's another takeaway. Did you notice that Biden didn't go on TV and talk about any of this? That is a major factor. And so one has to ask, why didn't he do that? And the short answer is, if he is seen as rebuffing the Iranian attack on Israel, then he's got his little problem in Michigan and Minnesota, where the pro-Hamas people are driving the Democratic Party over the cliff. And thank God they're doing it. And let them do more. Let them just destroy the Democratic Party so that there is no question that Biden will not win the next election, unless they even cheat more than they did last time, which is always a possibility. Okay, so here we are with those major takeaways, and I do think it's fundamental to an understanding of all this that we see this in the big picture arena, okay? This is a major struggle against the world's terror organization, which is the Iranians, okay? So my feeling is that what the Israelis have withstood and what they were able to inflict on the Iranians in response is part of this bigger picture. I mean, it is evil against God. It's the terror state against democracies, you know, especially the great Satan democracy and the little Satan democracy of Israel. That's what the Iranians have been calling us and Israel since they took over from the Shah in 1978. We have been at war with them. They have killed our people through their proxies and through their support of various terrorist groups. So the reality is that, and again, I've said this to you all before, the head of the snake has to be taken care of at some point. Now, are we at that point right now? Not with Biden. We didn't even have to be at that point under Trump. Okay, and I'm not going to repeat all the good stuff that Trump did to just keep the Iranians down. Been through it enough, you know the drill, okay? But at this particular juncture, let's go ahead and take a look at what the Israelis did in response, because here again, this had become a political issue. And I think it is important to understand this. The Israelis were in a dilemma. You had Biden and the U.S. basically tell them, hey, take the win. You know, you were able to defeat this massive incursion, and no one was hurt, hardly anything in terms of materials were destroyed. Take the win. Well, I mean, the problem with taking the win is you're just going to let the Iranians get away with this, even though nothing bad really happened. I mean, what does that do for deterrence? It seems like, in the end, the big picture for the Iranians is, hey, they're not going to respond to us. We can do this any damn time we want. Wrong thinking, okay? The other thing that came into the discussion prior to their response was this whole question, well, how proportional should it be? You know, and since there was very little damage done by the Iranians, shouldn't there be a proportional response by the Israelis? Well, the fact of the matter is that if you consider the 300 cruise missiles, drones, and ballistic missiles as a small attack, I think you're not thinking correctly about this. The reality is, despite the fact that there was no casualties, just think how many casualties could have been there with this massive attack that had, you know, all sorts, all sorts of potential to destroy a lot of things and kill a lot of people. So, does proportionality come into the play as far as the Israelis' response goes? In part, it does, and we'll get to that in a second. Okay. The question at this point now, though, is that yesterday afternoon, evidently, the Israelis basically said, we're not going to respond to this until after Passover, which begins on Monday. Well, guess what? It seems to me that was a strategic move on their point. They, I think, deceived the Iranians into believing that nothing was going to happen. And then something did happen, okay? And the something they did was they were able to penetrate the air defense system, and this is that Soviet system, they have the S-300. They penetrated it, went into central Iran, in the major city of Isfahan, where there's an air base, but there's also one of their major nuclear facilities. Now notice, the Iranians were not hit at the critical spots of both their oil and their nuke facilities, okay? But, and this is the key takeaway here, the Israelis were able to do whatever they wanted to do. They had complete control over the airspace, and it seems to me what you end up getting out of this is the buildup of deterrence once again. Okay? So how does this translate out into the real world? Very simply this. Because the Israelis were able to do what they did, impose their will, no problems, it sends a clear message to the Iranians, we are vulnerable, okay? Now, why is this important? Because the natural tendency for the Iranians would be to just release Hamas. Well, I mean, they're already under attack because of the Israelis. But Hezbollah, the Houthis, both of whom have been doing all sorts of things periodically, but Hamas is, you know, it's not the issue right now. It's Hezbollah, because Hezbollah has massive amounts of missiles. So let's just think for a second. The Iranians don't want to get into a tit-for-tat with the Israelis. They hit the Israelis hit them. They don't want to do that. But they theoretically could let Hezbollah launch their missiles. More than what they're doing, a major attack on the Israelis. But guess what? This is where deterrence comes into play. If Hezbollah is going to do that, who do you think the Israelis are going to go after? And I'm sure that the Iranians understand that their oil industry, and if I was the Israelis, I would have taken one of them out just to show them that they could do it. But if the oil industry goes up in smoke, then there goes the funding that they have to continue to support their proxy terrorist groups, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and Hamas. Okay? So that's the kind of issue that is critical in terms of this business of deterrence. And I've tried to suggest to you all before that Biden has been weak on deterrence ever since, well, hell, ever since he's been involved with politics, especially with Biden and Obama. But the point here is not to go back over all of that with Biden. The point here is that now the Iranians understand that they are vulnerable. And the Israelis, in their attack the other night, were able to discover exactly what the weak points were, and they have the ability to exploit that to the fullest the next round. So that is a deterrent effect that has been lacking until now. So we'll see where this goes with the Hezbollah folks. Of course, you know, one of the things that I would hope that would come after this is that the Israelis, you know, through their diplomatic means, tell the Iranians, get Hamas to release our hostages or you're going to lose something else. I hope like hell that happens. I mean, notice how Biden has done nothing to get American hostages released. No threats to do this, that, or the other. No sanctions imposed on the Iranians. Nothing. Okay? Giving them billions of dollars. I mean, I've been down this road. I'm not going to go through it again. But the fact of the matter is, we now have some leverage. And let's hope that they will do it. Okay? We'll see. All right. So, as we speak about this, this question about what is going to happen with the American-Israeli relations, the rift that we've talked about for the last 2 weeks, it's real. And the question is, why is this rift happening? Okay? And the reality is because the American domestic politics are driving Biden to the point where he sees that in Michigan and Minnesota especially, all of these pro-Hamas Nazi supporters are out there in droves. 100,000 of them in Michigan voted uncommitted in the Democratic primary. That's a major problem for Biden. So he can't afford to go on TV and rebuff the Iranians, you know, looking like he's pro-Israeli. That's just going to further alienate these pro-Hamas Nazis that we have in this country. But if he doesn't do that, what about all the Jewish voters that always support the Democrats? You know, Trump was right. Any of the Jews who support the Democrats after what's gone on in the last 5 months, they are crazy. They are. Because this Democrat Party has become completely compromised in terms of supporting the Israelis. So there's Biden's dilemma. Now, I had to start this show before I heard what Blinken was supposed to go on TV and say. So I'm sure some of you all are out there, you know, have had an opportunity to hear that. I'm anxious to hear it, and I'll pick it up next week. But the reality is, this is a major problem for Biden. And if American domestic politics are going to drive the train, then the Israelis are right to tell Biden and them to go to hell. We're going to do everything we can to reinforce the fact that we are an independent, sovereign country. We are going to defend ourselves, and we're going to defend ourselves if, despite it means it's to the detriment of Biden and his party. The hell with them. Okay, so I've gone on and on. I'd like to shift now to Baldwin County politics, and I know I'm not there. I get that. But on the other hand, there are a lot of people who are good friends of mine who are doing the hard work that we have been doing with Common Sense Campaign forever, and they're going to keep doing that. And so I really wanted to have an opportunity to have you all hear from Rebecca Wanson, as I suggested to you her, that she is the chair of Moms for Liberty in Baldwin County. Rebecca, can you hear me okay?
Yep, I gotcha.
Good. All right. So let's get into this, if we could. Let's just give the folks a brief review of, you know, who you are and how you got into this position, and then we'll talk more about some specific things.
Sure. I moved to Baldwin County 2 years ago, a little bit over 2 years ago, and I, during COVID, my family, we lived in Washington State, and we traveled for 2 years. The first year, we took off in our RV with our kids, and we just traveled around the U.S., and we spent a lot of time in the South because it was warm, and the Gulf of Mexico is so beautiful, and we started noticing that people were living very differently than they were in Washington State. And so after traveling for a year, we went back to Washington, and we just understood that what was happening there, what was happening in our community and in our schools, was not normal. And I started really looking into things and understanding that we needed to leave. By the time I understood what was happening, it was too late. And the things that were happening were basically this infiltration into our schools of sexualizing and indoctrinating our children into believing that there was systemic racism, which created a very, very difficult climate in the schools, where the teachers were exposed to children calling them a racist if the teacher asked the student to sit down or be quiet or to pay attention. So there was a complete lack of respect. They ended up, instead of calling security to the classrooms, they had to change the name of that to room service so that the students weren't offended. They were removing textbooks. It was just a really volatile climate, and it was all based on systemic racism that then infiltrated the children to where it created division, and it was really, really uncomfortable and dangerous for the teachers and for the other students that were not interested in participating in this. And so between that and then the sexualization of the kids believing that they were trans, they were bi, they were non-binary. I mean, it was just in my daughter's class, there was probably at least over 50% of the kids started identifying somewhere on the spectrum of these different IDs or ideas. And I just, these were kids that I had known since kindergarten, kids that we that went to church. I mean, these weren't families that were divorced or two-parent working families that weren't paying attention. These are really good parents. And right. So it was really terrifying, and we had to leave. And so Baldwin County was one of our stops along our travel. So we sold our home, and we traveled again for another year, and we chose to move here. So that's, you know, what brought us here. And then when we moved here, I just assumed that because we live in a Republican state, none of this stuff was happening, and it would never happen. And that was a false assumption, because I started noticing 2 months after we moved here, there was a drag show that children were invited to at a local restaurant downtown, and my red flag started going up, because you know, I was very aware of things and how they begin and what it looks like when you don't stop it. I've already lived the end of the story. And so I just started paying attention. I didn't say anything. I just really wanted to see what people around here thought. And I was so shocked at the amount of people that were supporting it and were happy about it and couldn't wait to bring their children. And also there was the, you know, the gay pride, Color Fair Hope with Pride downtown, which I had, you know, that was just something that was normal where I lived. And so I remember seeing the gay pride flag flying on the posts, the downtown, by the pier. And I didn't really, I wasn't really alarmed by that. It was something I had been used to seeing. But what did alarm me is that those flags were above the American flag. And my dad is a veteran. He served in Vietnam. And so I knew that wasn't okay. And so I just really started paying attention. So as most of us do, we just kind of, the month of June passes because, you know, as the gay pride month of June comes to a close, we end up moving on with our lives. And some of us aren't even paying attention to that anyway, because that's not something that we're attending or bringing our children to. And so I just went about my life, and then it starts coming around again, and I see advertisement for another drag show. And I was like, okay, I have to say something. This isn't just a one-time thing. So I ended up going to a city council meeting and speaking out, and the Madison County chapter chair, Emily Jones, contacted me and asked me if I would start a Moms for Liberty chapter here in Baldwin County. And that's kind of how this all got started. And go ahead.
Let me just add real quick, because as you're seeing all this develop, there is this movement in Alabama where we went after the CRT, DEI, and this whole drag stuff, which started to come about. So as you're developing, getting to see this, like you said, this is the same thing that happened out in Washington, and you wanted to stop that. And my point here is that there were people throughout the state that were starting to see the same thing and starting to try to speak out against it. So you came at a really good time, because people needed to hear that this had to stop. And that's why I think it's so important that you continue your work and you do as much as you can, as you have done, and to continue to do that, get more people involved with it. So I really want to thank you for what you've done with this, and taking the lead on it, because it is critical. So, all right, let's continue the story then, Rebecca. I'm sorry for interrupt, but I want people to understand that you know, you're not the Lone Ranger on this, but you are a major factor in turning this thing around, and we have to have people who are going to do this.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I also want to make a point that, you know, anytime you have someone who's speaking out against the sexualization of children and this ideology that I believe is an agenda that's trying to indoctrinate our kids, automatically you are called all kinds of names. But most recently I've been attacked as an extremist. So I guess now it's you're an extremist if you are trying to protect kids. And so I want to make a point. When I say protect children, I am saying protect all children. And that especially means children who are having a struggle with their identity. Those kids need to be protected. My children don't struggle with that. And, you know, I'm very on top of things and I pay attention. So when I'm speaking out, I really am speaking out for all of the children, not just my own. So
right.
I think it's important too to also note that there are many, many people that are gay and do not agree with what's happening to the children.
Exactly.
And I think they're all, the ones that are upset about this are sick and tired of this radicalized agenda being attached to them, and they don't want anything to do with it. So I do want to say that as well. But anyway, so recently we had a very heated city council meeting where, you know, there was two sides to every story, as there always is, and you have the one side that's supporting certain books that are in the library, and you have another side saying, you know, we don't want to ban any books. We just would like them moved to an appropriate section or flagged so that parents don't actually happen upon them, or maybe create their own section, whatever the solution could be. But we don't want them sprinkled in with all of the regular books. And what I noticed, the big theme of the whole night was, it seemed to me that the teen section is now considered adults. So I would, you know, like to know when a teen all of a sudden has become grown enough to read about sexual violence, drug overdosing, rape, pedophilia. I mean, these are some serious things that we have to address as parents. And it's not just, you know, violence from teen to teen. It's teachers committing pedophilia against their students, and all kinds of things that have to do with killing police officers and disrespecting, you know, your parents and people in the community. And so these are all topics that I don't believe a teen should have free access to without a parent knowing. And so I want to make that point that if a parent is responsible for a child until they're 18, then we have to say that these kids in the teen section, which there's no security in the library. I mean, anybody can go in there, and anybody can check out a book at the kiosk. You don't have to go to the librarian. So, you know, parents do need to pay attention, 100%. But we also need help from our public library and our public schools to secure things so that we can all work together to promote a healthy environment for our children. We don't need things that make our lives more difficult. We are all struggling to secure the phones, the Chromebooks, the computers, the TVs. I mean, we are doing more than anything that any of these older women that are at these library meetings or at these city council meetings are screaming about. They have no idea what it's like to be a parent today and the things that we're facing. So
let me say something real quick, because I think, you know, you've pointed to something that is absolutely critical, and it has to do with the value system that all of these books, all of these things that they can be exposed to, as you listed all of those kinds of things. There's no moral context to all of this. And so what's happening, and then we've seen this with TikTok, we've seen how the Chinese are doing their best to undermine the cultural values that have given us the kind of society that we have. And so it is absolutely critical that the parents do become awake to this. But as you and I have talked about, just because the parents are awake does not necessarily mean that the system is helping them. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that as we get into this, okay?
Yeah, I'll address the Miller test, because that was brought up in the meeting, the city council meeting, by a librarian. And you have to, the Miller test was, it's from 1973, and you have to enact the Miller for a book to be subjected to the Miller test, meaning for it to be removed, I guess, or considered inappropriate, you have to be able to check off all three standards. And so the first standard is whether the average person is applying contemporary community standards would find that the work taken as a whole appeals to the prurient interest. So
Right. What
that basically means is, what is our community and what are our standards? And is this book violating our community standards? So what I want people to understand is that the deterioration of your community provides more sexualization of the children. So the worse your community, the less you have to stand on with this Miller test. I do believe that these books violate the second one, which is whether the work depicts or describes in a patently offensive way sexual conduct specifically defined by the applicable state law. So I do believe that this content does violate our Alabama code. And then it says whether the work taken as a whole lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. I believe that these books violate that as well. So it's really that first one. And if we want to talk about the community standards, what do we, the sooner they deteriorate, the easier it is for all of this to be okay. So your library, your public library, your public school, the books that are allowed to be put in there in the children's section and exposed to our children directly correlates with the standards of your community. So if they're saying that these books, and I'll give you a few examples in a minute, but if they're saying that these books represent the standards of our community, well, you know what? We need to wake up then, because our community standards are low. And the more that they get deteriorated, the easier it is for this stuff to come in here.
I'm anxious for you to give us some of those examples.
Yeah.
So, the thing about it, they keep saying that we're the book banners, but the reality is that the liberals are the ones, and they're not even liberals, they're just this radical leftist. They are the ones that are banning books, okay?
Yes, so, we don't want to ban any books. We just want them put in the appropriate place, and nobody wants to ban a book that I know of that has advocated for this. I've never heard one person ban a book. I've also never heard anybody that doesn't agree with this stuff call these people names or attack them, which at the city council meeting, we were attacked. We were booed. We were disrespected. It was very uncivilized. So,
yeah.
You know, but I'll give you a few. Just in the public library, I'll just go with one right now. And it was in the 6 and under section. And I've actually started Moms for Liberty Story Hour. And if anybody would like to be put on that Story Hour list, you can email me at momsforlibertybaldwincounty@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to add you to it. But I just started a Story Hour because I'm just reading the books that are in there. And I don't need to talk about it. You can decide for yourself what you think. But this, there is a book in the 6 and under section called Hearts and Parts. And it literally discusses with little tiny kids about hormone injections, testosterone injections. It has a picture of a girl head with breasts and a penis. It has a picture of a little kid laying on a surgery gurney with bandages on their body because they got surgery, and they talk about taking medicine. And I mean, it's just like, you cannot tell me you're not targeting our kids. You can't tell me that. You can't tell me that we have a book in our public library and in our public school that is written at a kindergarten to second grade reading level, but it's a 9 to 12th grade interest level. And that is what's happening with these books. They are written for little kids to be able to read, but with an interest level of a teen. Either our children can't read in high school, or they're targeting the young ones and hoping that an older sibling will leave the book laying around. So there are things to be concerned about. These are not conspiracy theories anymore. It is happening. It is a social contagion, and it's a documented fact that this is happening to children, and they are contacted. These kids are learning from each other, and it can happen to anybody. It can happen to anyone. So at the city council meeting, there was a licensed clinical social worker named Sarah Bogdanovich. I believe that's how you pronounce her last name. Anyway, she noticed a real lack of expertise in childhood development and sexual awareness. And she said that she's one of the few that actually treats problematic sexual behavior in minors. And that's when minors are perpetrating sexual behavior on each other. And generally, these children have been sexually abused. So she basically says that in no way, in no time of any child that she has ever treated, has she ever had a child tell her that they got the idea from a book. and that the book made them become gay or trans. So I just want to play you a little clip of a video, and then we'll talk about that. So
okay.
Hi, I'd like to start off by thanking y'all for y'all's time. My name is Emily Schmidt. I am 25. I grew up not too far from here and graduated from PNG ISD. As a child, I was groomed to be trans. My school had a huge part in this. Media similar to the book Lily and Duncan led me into having gender dysphoria at 14 years old. Soon, my whole life became surrounded by trans everything. This made me believe that my body was wrong and needed fixing with surgeries and hormones. All I ever really needed was for someone to tell me that it is okay to be a tomboy. But instead, I was walked down a path of suicidal ideations and anxiety due to media like this book that you have available to seventh graders. I am here to ask you, why do you want to teach children that their bodies are wrong? Why do you want to teach children that self-hatred is good? Why do you want to teach children that they need to chop off healthy body parts in order to find true happiness? And why did people like you tell me as a little girl that I needed to self-harm in order to be truly happy?
I mean...
Okay, yeah.
That's incredible.
So why aren't we listening to the people that have actually gone through this and now they're adults and they're saying, no, it was a mistake. I'm a lifelong medical patient now. I have many health problems. These hormones and these testosterone injections or pills or creams, however you decide to take it as a child, they have lifelong medical consequences, infertility, cancer,
right.
Blindness. I mean, there are serious health consequences. And so that book in particular that she's talking about is not in our public library, and it's not in our schools, but there are books that are similar to that. And I'll just say that the summary of that book is that Lily is a transgender teen who is taking small steps to embrace who she truly is, a girl with male anatomy. Duncan is a boy who misses his father and deals daily with his bipolar disorder. Alternatives between Lily and Duncan's voices continue. And so it doesn't really sound that bad. I mean... just that description. And so I continue to, do research. And what's in our schools? So I'm thinking school libraries. Well, I discovered over 3 months ago an app on the kids' Chromebooks that's called Sora, S-O-R-A. It was developed in China. And it's a library. It's an online library for the kids. The books in there are immediately downloadable onto their Chromebooks within like 5 seconds, and they can also be checked in that quickly. And they're not just ebooks, they're also audiobooks. And so the school was notified, or the district was notified. K through 6 was suspended. Our 7 through 12th graders still have access to that. I literally just read a story in 1819 News that says Baldwin County schools are weeding out bad apples as progressive materials become more prevalent. And the superintendent goes on to say that they have reviewed nearly 20,000 books, and through that review, one book was removed and 7 have been reclassified into older age groups. So I can go in there. I can go into my kid's Chromebook and check it out. And just one example, there's a book called Beyond Magenta. And that book is in our public library. And that book is also in the Sora app.
Yeah.
And there's no controls on this app. Okay, we have an app that was developed in China, put on our kids' Chromebooks, and they're not... there's no controls, meaning who's accountable? Are the parents accountable? We are. However, if these kids can check these books out and check them back in and clear their history, how are we supposed to even monitor this? And if you have a public school or a public library that are putting these materials in, shouldn't they have a responsibility as well? I mean, like I said earlier, parents do not need you to make our jobs more difficult. So anyway, this is an example of the Beyond Magenta story, a transgender book, and it describes oral sex by a six-year-old. From six and up, I used to kiss other guys in my neighborhood, make out with them, and perform oral sex on them. I liked it. I used to love oral, and I touched their you-know-whats. We were really young, but that's what we did. It continues to go on to describe pedophiles masturbating. I mean, listen, there's violent behavior in here. We don't need our kids. We don't need this in their brains. We don't. There's a book on the Sora app that has, it's called The House of Spirits, and it's like a really amazing, apparently well-written, and it's got awards, this book. And it's got three chapters that describe a man going through the village and raping girls, little girls, like young girls, and he never gets, he has no consequences. It's like Harvey Weinstein in Spain. So it's like, what are we teaching our boys? And what are we teaching our daughters? You know, and so parents want to be involved. They want to be part of this. We want to say no, but we get ignored. I sent an email to the superintendent about this on Friday, the 12th, and I still haven't gotten a response. So, you know, it's like as a parent, you can only do so much.
In the last couple of minutes here, let's just kind of take a look at what we can do to get your voice heard and start making the changes that are necessary. What sort of things are you and Moms for Liberty and other grassroots organizations trying to do? And we've got a couple of minutes to do it.
I think what we're doing, what needs to be done first is educating the people in our community. I don't think that parents understand. So that's number one. Number two is making sure that teachers and counselors understand that Moms for Liberty and other grassroots groups want to support them. We want to we want our schools to be free of all of the discipline issues. We want our children to be healthy. We want our teachers to be able to teach and not have to raise other people's children. And right. So there's a level of fear in our Baldwin County district where we have, you know, teachers that can't, they don't feel comfortable saying what's really happening because they don't want to lose their job and or be transferred. I've had many teachers reach out to me anonymously and tell me these things. I've had over 150 parents contact me about the discipline problems in the schools. And here's the thing. We don't need to be afraid to talk about this. We can all come together and work together. But if you are not willing to acknowledge that there's a problem, then there's no foundation to begin with. So I believe that, you know, teachers and counselors, they need to be supported. And we need to talk about this because it's not that it's somebody's fault or that someone's failing and not doing their job. You know, we are living in an era where we're facing so many things that, you know, I believe education for parents and partnering with the schools is huge, and I can't see that it can be done any other way. So we are working, you know, towards really trying to, I guess, partner with our communities so that people are not afraid to talk about what's really happening.
Well, I think that, you know, just based on some of the things that we've seen in the past, I know that Dee Cox, who's been, you know, who took my place with the radio show, had his own negative experiences, both with the schools that his kids were in and when he would go to the Board of Education, people would just dismiss him outright. And I mean, I've had the same issue in terms of bringing up various issues with the school board over the years. So this is a daunting task, there's no question about it, but I do think that educating the public and putting public pressure through the media, getting the kinds of people who to write stories about this through 1819, and going on radio shows like this and Jeff Poor's show on 105, I think all of those kinds of things need to be done, and they need to be done in concert and in a dedicated way. It's just, we don't give up. And I think that, you know, I have to say that what you've been doing is just absolutely outstanding, and I just want to, you know, urge you to continue to march on the path that you're on there, Rebecca.
Okay? Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, listen, I know that probably running a little bit over.
Yeah, maybe even a lot over, but we do have to close the show out in just another minute. But if in a future show, Dr. Liu, if you could you check out, you know, Alabama State Law 13A-12-200, which is part of the Alabama Criminal Code, which deals with adult bookstores, adult movies, adult entertainment, and how this is illegal to produce to minors. How are the libraries able to skirt this issue if it's not just immoral, but illegal?
Hey, Mark, that's a great idea, and I think that you and Rebecca should have a quick conversation before you check out. And I know we're over, but like Lori told me, I had built up an extra half hour because we missed one on Friday. So I told her yesterday I'd probably take about 15 extra minutes, and it looks like I've taken a little bit more than 15 extra minutes. So I hope that doesn't mess up your schedule. But Rebecca, thank you so much for what you've done, and thank you for being on here today. And Mark, I appreciate your handling this and making it possible for Rebecca to have some of the things heard she wanted to put out over the radio. Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Liu.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Liu.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you. Bye.
Good luck to everybody. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye.
Okay, that was Dr. Liu Campomenosi of the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review. And, of course, we've also been joined by Rebecca Watson of Moms for Liberty. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
So, and we are going to get on out of here. Views expressed today do not necessarily reflect the management of this station or Eternity Media. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Show with Dr. Liu Campomenosi, former president of the Common Sense Campaign, adjunct professor of political science. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor, and the opinions and views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the station or management. Thank you for joining us, and let's get back to more music. And if Boz Skaggs knows anything about it, he knows that there's a breakdown dead ahead. 1480 WABF.